Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. So today we are reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 8. The author receives the orders of Krishna and Guru. And we will read text 5, which is on the board here. Mukha kavitva kare yan sabara smarane pango giri lange andha deke tara gane. Mukha kavitva kareyan sabara smarane. Pango giri lange anda deke taragane. Mukha kavitva kareyan sabara smarane. Pango giri lange anda deke taragane. Mukha kavitva kareyan sabara smarane. Pango giri lange andha deke taragane. Kavitva, poet, kare, becomes, yan, whose, sabara, all, smarane, by remembering, pango, the lame, giri, mountains, lange, crosses, anta, blind, deke, sees, taragane, the stars. Translation. By remembering the lotus feet of the Panchatattva, a dumb man can become a poet, a lame man can cross mountains, and a blind man can see the stars in the sky. This is a very wonderful verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, purport by Srila Prabhupada. In Vaishnava philosophy, there are three ways for perfection, namely, sadhana siddha, perfection attained by executing devotional service according to the rules and regulations. Nitya siddha, eternal perfection attained by never forgetting Krishna at any time, and Kripa Siddha, perfection attained by the mercy of the spiritual master or another Vaishnava. Kaviraj Goswami here stresses Kripa Siddha, perfection by the mercy of superior authorities. This mercy does not depend on the qualifications of a devotee. By such mercy, even if a devotee is dumb, he can speak or write to glorify the Lord splendidly. Even if lame, he can cross mountains. And even if blind, he can see the stars in the sky. Mukaka vitva kariyan sabara smarane pangugiri lange anta deke taragane. By remembering the lotus feet of the Panchatattva, a dumb man can become a poet, a lame man can cross mountains, and a blind man can see the stars in the sky. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nera Vishesha Shunyavadi Paschitya Dejitarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchikapaturubhyas jai kripa sindhu bhyevacha vaditanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Hare Krishna. It would be a good idea to get something to put over this to avoid the what happens when you, what's the term? I forget the exact term, but when you speak certain syllables, p, b, yeah, it's called a pop filter. A pop filter, something which goes, and then you don't get these p. See? Anyway, Hare Krishna. So what a wonderful verse. What a wonderful verse. It is one of the great classic verses, and it's very popular, favorite verse with devotees, because who of us really has some great qualification? Who can stand up and say, I will go back to Godhead by my own qualification, my own Shakti, Mary Bhakti Shakti, back home, back to Godhead, pat ourselves on the back. Of course, this is not part of Krishna consciousness. Trinada pisa nichena taror iva sahishnuna Manina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. One should chant the holy names of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, ready to offer all respects to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. And of course, only in that state of mind is it possible at all to chant the holy names of the Lord constantly or even on a very regular basis. Yes, so here, of course, as Srila Prabhupada points out in the purport, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is particularly pointing out Kripa Siddha, or the phenomenon of a person becoming siddha, perfect, particularly by kripa, by mercy. So certainly humility is a very important part of that. In fact, it's an essential element. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his commentary on that particular verse from Shikshastakam, he discusses what does it mean that one should be, one should feel oneself lower than the straw in the street. Thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. So the idea, he says, is that the straw in the street just lies there in the street, and people walk on it, and the straw in the street does not think that, how dare they walk on me, they shouldn't walk on me, this is not right. But in a certain sense, of course, the straw is lying there thinking, yes, this is quite right. People should just walk on me because what else am I good for? I'm just otherwise I'd have no use. If people didn't walk on me, I would become totally, totally irrelevant. So at least they walk on me, and therefore my existence has some meaning. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, in this sense, the straw in the street has no false ego. But he's simply thinking, I'm just a straw in the street, I am just too useless, and so this is the right thing. It's good that I'm here, being walked on. But then Bhaktivinoda discusses that we should think ourselves lower. We are worse than the straw in the street. In what sense? In the sense that whereas the straw has no false ego and is completely resigned to his rightful position, we are not. We are proud, and if someone walks on us, then we think, who are you? How can you walk on me or mistreat me or say something bad about me? How dare you? So because we have that false ego, which is, you know, actually the fact is that we are completely useless. We are completely useless. We're worse than completely useless. We are menaces to ourselves. Absolute menaces to ourselves and everybody else, but first and foremost ourselves. Sri Sri Radha Goloka Nanda Ki, Sri Giri Govardhan Ki, Sri Sri Gornitai Ki. So in that sense, whereas the straw is not bewildered, the straw is not in Maya, in that sense, we are deeply in Maya. So if we understand in that light, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, then we can understand, actually, yes, I'm lower than the straw in the street. Look at me, my fallen condition, just full of false ego. So here, Srila Prabhupada is focusing on, the verse is focusing on, kripa, mercy, kripa siddha. A person can become perfect by mercy. And Prabhupada mentions, of course, in the purport, there are three paths, really, for to achieve siddha, perfection. Sadhana siddha, perfection achieved through some practice of regulated devotional service under the order of the spiritual master and the spiritual authorities like that. A person can become perfect. And then there's nitya siddha. A person can become perfect eternally. Well, of course, become is not exactly the right term. But nitya siddha really means just that state of eternal perfection, which was never lost. It was always there. So there's not a question really of attaining it, generally speaking at least. It means eternal perfection, like Srimati Radharani, Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, so many other of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. None of them ever followed any process of sadhana to achieve the positions they're in. They've always been in the positions they're in. And really speaking, particularly for like the ones we mentioned, Radharani, Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, and of course there are many others, there's not even really a possibility that they may or might fall down, or could possibly fall down and enter material existence as we have done, because they are not marginal potency. They're not tatastha shakti. They're not. They're the swarup shakti. They're the internal, personal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they're in a different category to us. They're not jivas. They're not jiva souls. They're part of the internal potency. So, therefore, they don't really have the capacity to fall down. We have the capacity because we are marginal. At least that is the foundational, fundamental reason why we have the capacity, why it can happen, is because we are marginal. We are spiritual. We are actually spiritual living beings, Sat Chit Ananda, as Krishna is Sat Chit and Ananda. We are also Sat Chit Ananda, as Radharani and the other great gopis and other eternal associates, Nanda Maharaj, etc., are Sat Chit Ananda. We are also Sat Chit Ananda. We are not less Satchit Ananda. But because of our small size, we have a marginal tendency. We can go this way, we can go that way, it depends. And of course, at this point, for all of us sitting here today, we have all gone that way. And now we're trying to come back. But it's some distance to come back before you get to the spiritual platform, at least in the sense of being like completely on the spiritual platform. We're working on it. It is a work in progress. And sometimes there may be a little stumbling and even sometimes perhaps some regression or something like that. It's a bit of an adventure, actually. So this is because we are marginal potency. Jivera swarupaya krishnera nityadas krishnera tatasta shakti bade abade prakash. This is how Lord Chaitanya puts it in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That we're actually all the jivas, we're all the eternal servants of Krishna, that's what we are. But jivira tatasta shakti. Still, the jiva is marginal potency, bade, abade, prakash, simultaneously one with and different from the Lord. So there, these different potentialities are there. So yes, how to become perfect? This is the question. How to become perfect? Srila Prabhupada discusses in Nectar of Devotion. It's an interesting discussion. Prabhupada makes this point. He talks about sadhana siddha, nitya siddha, kripa siddha. And in terms of course, nitya siddha's special category, the question of becoming nitya siddha, or becoming, if you are nitya siddha, the question of becoming doesn't really arise. But certainly sadhana siddha, kripa siddha. So Srila Prabhupada discusses these two ways of becoming perfect. And Prabhupada explains that what is sadhana siddha? That one follows the instructions of the spiritual master and renders devotional service and studies the scriptures and associates favorably with the devotees and in general embraces the way of life of Krishna consciousness. And in this way, one works at it and gets up early in the morning, even though the mind may have another idea and the body. But still, the devotee doing sadhana, bhakti, gets up in the morning despite some discomfort sometimes, at least as much as possible. Prabhupada was asked once, is there a good excuse, like an acceptable excuse, for missing Mangal Arati if you're living in a temple? Can there be a good excuse? What would it be? Srila Prabhupada, we are told, said yes, there can be a good excuse, just one: death. Other than that, there may be many excuses, but none of them are really acceptable. They're not really like good excuses where the others could say, oh, okay, that's fine. Anyway, you know, sometimes some sickness may be there or some other things. But otherwise, in terms of sadhana bhakti, we must follow the program. That is it. And flexibility, there's not really much flexibility. Yeah. Not really. The basic point is you follow the program given by the spiritual master and by scripture. This is sadhana bhakti. And then Srila Prabhupada discusses kripa siddha. And the basic idea, of course, is that, as Prabhupada mentions here, this mercy does not depend on the qualification of a devotee. And Prabhupada gives the example that sometimes at some university educational institution gives someone a degree. But, of course, the university is giving so many people degrees every year. But now this person did not follow the course and attend the lectures and sit the exams and pass. He was not even a student. He was not even there at all. He was just elsewhere. But somehow or other, the university authorities decided to give him, it's called an honorary degree. And it's generally a reflection of the fact that the person has achieved some things in that field. Not always even, but oftentimes. I've mentioned here before, I don't know if any of you will remember, how many years ago, famous, extremely famous Western English rock and roll music star was given an honorary PhD in economics by the London School of Economics. His name is Mick Jagger, famous member of the Rolling Stones. So actually in his youth, before he started that musical group, he was a student there, but he failed, and he dropped out. So anyway, many years later, like when he was maybe 60 years old or something, they gave him an honorary degree in economics, the same London School of Economics. And one of the lecturers there protested, "What does he know about economics? The only thing that he knows about economics is that he has a lot of money." Which in one sense means you know something good about economics. As Prabhupada said once, that one of the Rockefellers was asked, you know, "Do you have intelligence?" Something along those lines. And the man put his hand in his pocket and pulled out money and said, "Yes, see, this is the evidence that I have intelligence." Anyway. So Prabhupada then in Nectar of Devotion, you can read it. It's in the earlier chapters. It's in, I think, chapter 17 it's discussed. 17, 19, where there's the discussion about coming to the level of bhava and then coming to the level of prema. So you can come to the level of bhava or prema and prema either by sadhana or by kripa, by mercy. So Prabhupada gives this example then of a person getting an honorary degree in a university, and it happens. Every year, some people, politicians or whoever, here and there in the world, there's always a few people get honorary degrees. It's common. It's not unusual. But then Srila Prabhupada makes the point that if you really want the degree, if you need the degree, then so what should you do? Which path should you take? Should you take the path of studying like the regular students and in that way getting the degree? Or should you decide that, no, I think I'll just get an honorary degree? You know, the option is there. You could decide one way or the other, but Prabhupada makes the point that really, if you want the degree, don't think that I'll try for an honorary degree because it's extremely unlikely you'll get it. You might as well just follow the normal course of studying and etc., being a regular student, and get your degree in that way. Because otherwise, honorary degree is rare. I'm sure it's not 1 in 100 out of 100 people who get degrees. I'm sure it's less than 1 of those 100 who gets the honorary degree. Maybe it's 1 in 1,000 or 1 million or whatever, but it's a very small percentage get their degrees in the honorary way without studying. So Prabhupada makes that point that if we really want to progress in Krishna consciousness, then we must follow the process of sadhana bhakti. However, we find, particularly in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and we find also in Srimad Bhagavatam to some degree, and we find in Bhagavad Gita also, that although the regular process of sadhana bhakti is certainly emphasized mainly, but we find there's always here and there, in certain places, there's always mention of mercy. And there's always some emphasis given to mercy, even though the regulated processes are generally emphasized and stressed and elaborated upon how to develop your Krishna consciousness, how to change your life and your program of activities, and how to avoid undesirable things. This is certainly emphasized more quantitatively in terms of the information we receive, but still you always find the mention of mercy. Yes. So the fact is that even though sometimes there may be someone who is just completely Kripa Siddha, they actually have absolutely no qualification, but they just get some mercy and then, oh, there they go. Generally, the process effectively is, on a basic level, sadhana siddha or sadhana bhakti with mercy as an essential element. And devotees always, generally at least, devotees always understand that I'm in Krishna consciousness by mercy. I'm able to continue by mercy. And if I ever become perfect, it will be by mercy. Yeah. So both things are there, generally. Occasionally you get the special cases. One prominent special case mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam is Putana. Putana. Aho bhakiyam stanakala kutam jighamshaya payayad apyasad vi. Uddhava is speaking in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And just immediately after Krishna has left this world, and Uddhava is saying, aho, alas, alas. Now that Krishna has left this world, how will I find someone who can be merciful to me? Where will I find such a person now who can be merciful now that Krishna's gone? Because he was so merciful, he gave the position of mother to Putana, even though she was a she-demon and she came to kill him. Still, he gave her the position of mother. So the position of Putana then is like, in terms of Kripa Siddha, the position, the case of Putana is very, very special. Extremely special. Because her lack of sadhana was more or less complete. She was more or less completely devoid of any sadhana, any Krishna conscious qualification, any desire to be Krishna conscious, anything. She was in fact the polar opposite of the aspiring devotee who may become perfect by the more usual means. The only qualification she had was that, as you may be aware, in her previous life, she was the daughter or sister of Bali Maharaj. And when Lord Vamana walked into the assembly of Bali Maharaj, in the beginning of his program of taking back the universe, Bali Maharaj had conquered the universe and kicked the demigods out. So Lord Vamana came on behalf of the demigods to take the universe back. So when he first arrived, he was very beautiful and very saintly and very sweet little devotee child, just like Sulochani, and probably more, actually. I thought you'd wake up. So he was just so sweet and saintly and just captivating, like the perfect child. And this daughter or sister of Bali Maharaj, as a young girl, unmarried girl, quite young, growing up a bit, maybe teenage or something, she saw this exceptional, practically unique, wonderful little child, and her motherly instincts were aroused, and she thought, oh, what a beautiful child. I would love to have this child as my son and breastfeed him. Then, of course, the whole pastime unfolded, and Lord Vamanadeva took the universe away. And then even he arrested Bali Maharaj. Yeah, and had him tied up and locked up. And the sister or daughter got very angry with Lord Vamana that, oh, see what you've done. So in the future, maybe I'll have you as my son and breastfeed you. But if I do, I'll kill you. And then in her next life, she was born as Putana. And when she approached Krishna, the Bhagavatam explains, it's in the earlier chapters of the 10th canto, as she approached Krishna and then saw him in the cradle, that little motherly feeling was momentarily aroused for maybe a second or something like that. And momentarily she thought, oh, what a beautiful little child, that little motherly feeling. But then it was gone. And then she tried to kill him. So, in other words, if it was a question of sadhana, systematic cultivation of devotional principles, devotional activities under the direction of guru and the devotees and scripture like that. So you could say Putana was more or less totally devoid. At best, she had this tiny little motherly feeling momentarily, at best, which is not even really part of sadhana, maybe in the sense of raganuga sadhana, but otherwise it's got nothing to do with sadhana. It was just a sentiment because of her feminine nature. So despite that, she went back to Godhead. So this is classic Kripa Siddha. Then arguably an even more classic example of Kripa Siddha is Agasura, who was the brother, one of the was killed by Krishna, and also went back to Vaikuntha and got a four-armed form there. So he's also Kripa Siddha. Just by the mercy of the Lord, he was delivered. And the question arises that Putana had some qualification at least, even though it was so small, but at least something was there. But what about Agasura? He had no qualification. He had no feelings, positive feelings for Krishna at all. Nothing. He simply hated Krishna only. In other words, he was something like, you could say, a pure demon. Only demoniac. No mixture. Putana had little mixture. Agasura had no mixture. Simply a demon. So how did he go back to Godhead? Well, he was killed by Krishna. That is another form of Kripa Siddha. Generally, the demons killed by Krishna, they're liberated. Well, at least they're liberated. But he went to Vaikuntha. So the question is then, how? Why? What was his qualification? And the answer to that question is, he was the brother of Putana. That's all. He was the brother of Putana. And when you were dear to a devotee, and they were very close, brother and sister. In fact, Agasura, after Krishna killed Putana, he sort of made like a vow, I will kill this Krishna who killed my beloved sister, and I will offer Krishna's blood to her as a form of pinda or something, because she was very fond of blood. So what a demon. But because he was dear to a devotee, he went back to Godhead, despite totally lacking qualification otherwise in the normal sense. So for us, we find in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have this verse, and there are many other verses throughout Chaitanya Charitamrita, and there are examples of devotees also, who they were devotees, but they got mercy. The importance of mercy is emphasized in Krishna consciousness in general, but particularly it's emphasized in Krishna consciousness as given by Lord Chaitanya. There's particularly strong emphasis on mercy. So therefore, we find in, for example, the song of Narottam Das Thakur, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Daya Koramore, quite a popular song, that Narottam Das Thakur, every verse basically, he's asking for mercy. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Daya Koramore, give me your Daya. Daya and Kripa are more or less synonymous, more or less the same term. So, Daya Koramore, Lord Chaitanya, please be merciful to me. And then he goes on to say, Haha Prabhu Nityananda Premananda Suki Kripa Bolo Kanakoro Ami Baro Duki. That you, Lord Nityananda, Kripa Koro, you be merciful to me. And then Advaita Acharya, Daya Koro Sri Sitapati Advaita Gosai. Advaita Acharya, you be merciful to me also. And then Haha Prabhu Sanatana Rupa Raguna, the six Gosamis, Lokanath Gosami, and he's appealing to them. He doesn't actually use the word mercy exactly, but obviously he's appealing to them for mercy. And then the last verse, Daya Koro Sri Acharya, Prabhu Srinivas, Srinivas Acharya, you also, please be merciful to me. And it's interesting that Srinivas Acharya is not a senior to him. We might normally think that if we're going to appeal for mercy, kindness, and something like that, we would be appealing to some superior person who's in a higher position. We're in the lower position. We need some help from a person who's higher. We might think this would be the normal way of seeing things, but here now, Srinivas Acharya is his equal. They were friends, Narottam Srinivas and Shyamananda Pandit. They were very close friends. But still he's praying to his equal, you be merciful also. And what mercy? Ramachandra Sangamage. You please allow me to have the association of your disciple, Ramachandra. Ramachandra Kaviraj was a disciple of Srinivas Acharya. Srinivas is an equal. They're basically the same age and the same sort of spiritual generation, Narottam and Srinivas. But Ramachandra is a junior. He's a junior. He's a disciple of Srinivas, and therefore he's junior to Narottam. But Narottam is asking, please give me mercy by allowing me to have the association of this particular disciple of yours. So mercy plays a very important part in the lives of the followers, the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, people who are practicing devotional service, sadhana, bhakti, but as given by Lord Chaitanya. It's emphasized so much. And Srila Prabhupada put it very nicely one time. You take one step towards Krishna. Krishna takes 10 steps towards you. In other words, you do your sadhana. You do your sadhana. You must do. In other words, you take your one step. But Krishna, he takes 10. So in other words, sadhana should be there, needs to be there. But ultimately, the mercy is the main factor, actually. And mercy, of course, if we consider what is mercy and what is not mercy, if you are given something out of a person's mercy because they are merciful, they gave you. Or on the other hand, if people gave you something, even the same thing, because they owed it to you, like in business or just ordinary life, you go to the supermarket and you select certain goods and you pay the money and then you can take the goods. They become yours. So the fact that they have given you the goods is not their mercy. It's just business. You have paid the price. So it is not mercy. If you were just standing there and they walked up to you and said, here, take this, bang, and they gave you all the goods, and no, you don't have to worry about money, then it's mercy. Then it's mercy. But mercy, so mercy naturally has to imply, it has to include that we are not qualified to get what we are getting. Otherwise, it can't be mercy. If we just get what we deserve, that's just business, or it's just sort of fair, honest. To give people what they deserve is just a matter of honesty. So it's not mercy. The people in the supermarket cannot say that, oh, we're so merciful. We give away tons of food every day. We are feeding the nation. How merciful we are. They can't say that. It's business. So, if because of your activities, you are due to get something, and you get it, that is not mercy. Mercy can only be there if you don't deserve it. Or at least, maybe you half deserve it, something like that. So it's half mercy. And so therefore, you know, sometimes devotees ask, what is the difference between mercy and causeless mercy? And the answer really speaking is, there isn't really a difference. Because mercy has to be causeless. Otherwise, it's not mercy, it's just giving people what they deserve. So mercy, causeless mercy, essentially, it means the same thing. Maybe causeless mercy means when a person really doesn't deserve it in a big way, like extremely undeserving. But the merciful person really gives them a lot, despite them really not deserving it. Then maybe you could say it's like it's outstanding mercy. Special mercy, unlike, you know, regular mercy, if there is such a thing. And then you could call it causeless mercy. So definitely, like Srila Prabhupada said, you take one step towards Krishna, he takes 10 steps towards you. And sometimes you take one step towards Krishna, and he takes 20 steps towards you. And sometimes you take one step, he takes 100 steps. Yeah. And sometimes even maybe you take one step backwards. Yeah. But Krishna comes chasing after you 10, 100, 200 steps and drags you back. Yeah. But we should understand that in our execution of Krishna consciousness, we have to take our one step. In our humble little ways, even though we are really not just lacking in qualification, like we have some qualification but not a lot. It's not exactly that. Our position generally is that we have no qualification, but rather we have many disqualifications. You understand the difference? It's one thing if you have zero money, if you're bankrupt, broke. It's another thing if you have no money, but you owe people money still. Then you're in a negative, a minus position. It's not just a zero position. So we're not just in a zero position in the sense of lacking substantial spiritual qualification. But really our position tends to be that we have many disqualifications, many anti-Krishna conscious tendencies to think. If we see a nice member of the opposite sex, to think, oh, looks nice. This is a disqualification. material attraction just for our own sense gratification. But these types of habits are ingrained. Material security, money. I need money. Then I need more money. And then I need even more money. Then I need the most money. Then I need even more than the most money. You know, it happens sometimes. Sometimes. Devotee gets business opportunity. And devotee says, yes, I will make a lot of money and give a lot to Krishna. But first I will make, you know, a million, say, 5 million rupees. First I'll make 5 million rupees. Once I've reached 5 million, then I'll start giving. Until then, you know, I need to keep the money to build things up. So, but what happens sometimes is the person comes to 5 million, but then they say, well, wait a minute, I have to build it up to 10 million. Then I'll give some money. And, you know, in India, it's a really common thing. People start a business and they make Krishna or Vishnu or Lord Shiva or Durga a member of the, like a shareholder in the company. It's common. It's common. Krishna has a 10% share in the company. But the famous joke, of course, is that Krishna never comes to claim his 10%. So in other words, we just keep it. Because they consider it like a blessing to have the Lord connected to the business. So yes, we should understand that we need to do our sadhana. We should not try to take the position of Kripa Siddha, that I will not do anything. I just will wait for the mercy to come. We have to do our sadhana, take the position of the sadhana siddha, and do as much as we can, whatever we're able. Do our maximum. But we should understand that our maximum, at best, is maybe like we said, Prabhupada says, you take one step, Krishna takes 10. Even we do our maximum, still the main factor is Krishna's mercy. So like that, when Krishna's mercy is there, even the most incredible, unbelievable, impossible things can happen. You know the famous story of how they first produced Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yeah. They were doing one book every 2 months. And Prabhupada told them that we want it more quickly. And so they had a special meeting and they came back and said, yes, Srila Prabhupada, we will double it. We will increase. We will do one book a month. In other words, there were 17 books. We will only take 17 months. And Prabhupada said, no, I want them all in 2 months. And the devotee, like the manager, BBT, said, but Prabhupada, that's impossible. And Prabhupada famously said, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. And they did it. They did it. They did it. And they produced all the books. And when the last book was produced in America, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. A devotee flew from America to India and went to Vrindavan to give Prabhupada the last book when it was finished. And he arrived 2 months and 1 day gave him the last book. We did it. Prabhupada, you know what he did? He didn't say, "Oh, you just did fantastic. You're wonderful." Prabhupada looked at him and said, "You are one day late." So Prabhupada was a person who understood the factor of mercy and the reality of mercy, and that if you really take your one step, your real, your best one step, even though it's only one out of many steps, but if you take your one step to the best of your ability, then Krishna will do the rest, and impossible becomes literally a word in a fool's dictionary completely. And Prabhupada knew this is actually how it works. It doesn't simply work on the basis of, you know, we do our duty, we work hard. Ultimately, the main factor is mercy. So mercy is so great, so powerful. A dumb man can become a poet, a lame man can cross mountains, a blind man can see the stars in the sky. And on the other hand, someone who does not get the mercy, and particularly for people who are like non-devotees, they're just not making any effort to serve Krishna. Rather, they're anti-Krishna. For people like that, then, even if they're big experts, they may find themselves unable to do that which they're supposedly big experts at. And classic example of that is Keshav Kashmiri, described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Big scholar. Extremely big scholar, the biggest. And he came to challenge Lord Chaitanya, and he thought, just show people that Lord Chaitanya's a fool, and that he, Keshav Kashmiri, is just big expert. So like that, he lost whatever mercy he had had, and he started reciting. He composed and recited instantaneously on the spot 100 verses glorifying the Ganges, which he thought in Sanskrit, which he thought were perfect. And he asked Lord Chaitanya, "What do you think of those verses?" And Lord Chaitanya said that, except for the mistakes, they were really nice. And Keshav Kashmiri thought, "What? There were no mistakes. What do you mean, except for the mistakes?" And Lord Chaitanya took just one verse and found several mistakes, glaring mistakes, in just one verse. And he told him, actually, every verse is like that. And Keshav Kashmiri was astonished. But then he thought, no, I must say something else and establish my position, my qualification. So he started trying to say some other things, but it came out like nonsense. Like he's talking, you know, like a little child who's just learning a couple of words, papa, mama, and the rest is just, you know, sort of like a noise. He started speaking like that. And everyone heard him and they thought, wow, what happened to him? And Lord Chaitanya, they started laughing. And Lord Chaitanya told them, don't laugh. He's a big scholar. You keep composed. So then again, Keshav Kashmiri tried to say something creative and intellectual and impressive, but it came out just like a noise. In English we say, double Dutch. Dutch is a language, they call it marbles. It sounds like someone has marbles in their mouth and they're trying to speak. You know, whoa, 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 whoa. And it's just some weird sound. So double Dutch means it's like complete madness. So he was speaking like that. And Lord Chaitanya could not stop the devotees or the people. They were just laughing and laughing. And Keshav Kashmiri couldn't understand what happened. But he understood, I must have lost the mercy of Mother Saraswati, because he was a worshipper of Saraswati, the goddess of learning. And he was empowered by her. And she appeared in his dream and told him, yes, you're right. You're right. Because you were trying to embarrass my Lord, I took my mercy away and you ended up looking like a fool. So even someone as expert, super expert in some field, but if they lose the mercy, they become like fools, even in that field. So the mercy is such an important part of Krishna consciousness, and we should always pray for mercy. But we should never stop making our best effort. As is pointed out in the 10th canto in the Damodar Leela, Mother Yashoda was trying to tie Krishna, but the rope was always two fingers too short. No matter how much rope, more and more rope was there, always two fingers too short. So the one finger represents the mercy of the Lord. And the other finger represents the endeavor of the devotee. Both have to be there. Not just one or the other, but both have to be there. And yes, this is a very wonderful part of being a devotee. Seeing the mercy of the Lord happening, seeing it happen to others and to oneself. It's very amazing. So therefore, the devotees celebrate the mercy of the Lord. And there's one poem by one of our acharyas in which he's saying, I just glorify the mercy of the Lord. On and on and on. I just glorify the mercy of the Lord without stopping. And there's famous incident you may have seen. It's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita. A little, maybe. But it's described in Chaitanya Bhagavat how Gadadhar Pandit was taken by Mukunda Dutt to meet Pundarik Vidyanidhi, very great devotee, who had just arrived in Navadweep. And Mukunda Dutt told Gadadhar, you know, I want to take you and introduce you to this devotee. He's such a special devotee. So Gadadhar went and they arrived there. And there was Pundarik Vidyanidhi reclining on some sort of like a sofa, a couch, lying there with some beautiful young lady dropping grapes into his mouth. He was lying there with his mouth open. She was dropping the grapes in. Another young lady was fanning him. And he was opulently dressed and everything was so opulent. And it looked, you know, certainly didn't look like your average great devotee. And Gadadhar saw this and he became bewildered. Why do you tell me this person's a great devotee? Look at him. He's just a sense enjoyer. And Mukunda Dutt noticed that Gadadhar was feeling confused and couldn't understand. So what he did to show what this Pundarik Vidyanidhi is really like, what a devotee he really is, he recited that verse we mentioned, about Putana, Uddhava speaking. Aho bhakiyam stanakala kutam. Jikamsaya payayat apyasadvi. Krishna's so merciful. He gave the position of nurse to Putana. Because it's impossible. It's completely impossible. But because Krishna's so merciful, he gave the position of nurse to Putana. So Mukundadat recited that verse. Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he's lying there sort of luxuriating and enjoying life. Suddenly he heard the verse. Suddenly he just stopped for a second, 2-3 seconds. He just sort of became suspended animation. And suddenly he started screaming and roaring and just rolling on the ground, smashing everything, crying and crying and just and calling out that verse. Aho bhakiyam, aho bhakiyam. And just smashing his own body and smashing everything in the room and for 3 hours before he calmed down. So this is an example of appreciating the mercy. It's not just a matter of, oh, that's nice. Krishna was merciful. Good. Thank you, Krishna. It's a big thing. It's a very big thing. The mercy. And as devotees progress, they appreciate the mercy more and more and how dependent they are on mercy. And ultimately the great devotees like the gopis, they are just looking for mercy everywhere. When Krishna left, they were walking in the forest, they were asking the trees, help us please to find Krishna. They're asking the animals, help us, please. It's a particular condition, part of prema, which is described in Nectar of Devotion, where the devotee is just so overwhelmed with love for Krishna that the devotee attributes like conscious qualities to entities or even things which don't have those attributes, those qualities. Like the trees. They can't see anything. They're trees. But the gopis were asking them, tell us, which way did Krishna go? He must have walked by, you must have seen. So they're attributing that. It's like a human quality to a subhuman living entity, a tree, or some flowers, or even the grass, or some animal. Because mercy, oh, mercy is very special. And without mercy, even you have the best sadhana in the world. You know, if you just become like a sadhana machine, press button A and away you just go. But without mercy, best sadhana in the world, you won't really get very far at all. Hare Krishna. Any comment or question? Krishna Chandra Prabhu. Kripa Kaurav. course, that's one of the, it's a question which comes up from time to time. The thing is, you know, Prabhupada didn't really go into great detail of sort of like the mechanics of how it works. Prabhupada would basically say, misuse of our minute independence. So, you know, that really should be enough for us without trying to sort of cross-examine and, you know, even imagine some reasons. But it's misuse of our minute independence because we have it. It exists. And because it exists, it can be misused. It's rare. It's not like half of the living entities fall down. It's not the 10%. It's not even 1%. It's some incredibly small fraction of 1% fall down. Yeah. So in other words, it's extremely unusual. It doesn't happen. It practically doesn't happen. But it happens occasionally. And why? Because of misuse of our minute independence in some way. Somehow or other, some wrong idea popped into our minds. We became attached to it. And we wouldn't give it up. And then we woke up in Maurice. Bienvenue. Okay. Took a bath afterwards to clean the dirt off. And, you know, I don't know, have you noticed any mental instability since then?
Yeah.
course, we're not on the level of the gopis, so, you know, it's not exactly the same for us, but wonderful. Yes, please.